It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Campaign finance records show that a senior FBI executive's wife received in excess of $400,000 from Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, a longtime Clinton ally. Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe's wife, Dr. Jill McCabe, ran for Virginia State Senate last year. While she lost the race, she received $467,000 from McAuliffe's PAC and another $207,000 from Virginia's Democratic Party, about a third of her total campaign funds. McAuliffe personally met with Dr. McCabe and her husband in March 2015 to encourage a run. At that time, Andrew McCabe was associate FBI director with no role in the Clinton case. 3 months after his wife lost her Senate race, Andrew McCabe was promoted in February to deputy FBI director with oversight of the email probe. Critics emphasize these events, first reported by the Wall Street Journal, coupled with the controversial tarmac meeting in June between Attorney General Lynch and Bill Clinton 1 week before Hillary Clinton's FBI interview, reflect poorly on the Justice Department and the FBI. Trump hit hard on the new allegations today.
It's unbelievable how Hillary Clinton got away with the email lie, the email scam, the email corruption, but now at least we have a pretty good idea.
The FBI ethics manual says employees must avoid even the appearance of a conflict. According to the FBI, McCabe flagged his wife's Senate race last year, and the matter was reviewed internally before his promotion. Quote, McCabe and FBI lawyers implemented a system of recusal from all FBI investigative matters involving Virginia politics, a process followed for the remainder of her campaign. During the campaign, he played no role, attended no events, and did not participate in fundraising. Meantime, McCabe was recently called by the House Government Oversight Committee to brief staffers on allegations of a quid pro quo between a senior State Department executive and an FBI agent in the Clinton case, Brett.
All right, that was Catherine Herridge last night on Fox. I think that's the most remarkable story of the news cycle. And, you know, there's a lot of competition. Sandy Rios with you this morning, and happy to be back. And thank you to Abraham Hamilton III for filling in yesterday. I know you guys really loved having him host. We've seen the Facebook posts, and I'm grateful to Abraham for taking time out of his busy day to host the show. We had a great time in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and also at Calvin College on Saturday morning, and it was wonderful to meet in person all of you wonderful people up in Michigan who are faithful listeners to American Family Radio. Thank you for everything, all of your words of encouragement, and we certainly are a team. And I want to just say, for those of you down in Texas, I will be in Houston this weekend at the Stand for Truth Conference. If you haven't signed up, just go to Stand for Truth, Stand for Truth, a conference, and you can find out how to do that, and we'd love to see you. It's, I think you can go part of Friday, and it's also on Saturday. You just have to look to see what would work for you. But Dr. Jeffress will be there, lots of other, Dave Welch, who's one of the Houston Five pastors. It's going to be a really powerful conference, and I hope you'll come and join us. All right, there's a lot to talk about this morning. I want to skip ahead, Jeff, a heads up on this, to clip one. You know, there's a lot of complaint about voter fraud. Donald Trump is talking about it. And of course, you know, even Republican operatives, oh, there's no such thing as voter fraud. You know, Robert Spencer wrote an article about that. He said, you know, the elites of both parties don't want to talk about this because they don't want you to know that the system really is rigged. And I think he's right about that. I'm not appalled when Donald Trump says that because we know too much. And so let me just tell you that out of Amarillo, people are voting and they are complaining. I don't know how many. But they are saying when they vote a straight party Republican, the ballot switches over to select Clinton and Kaine instead of Trump and Pence. We've heard this before in other voting machines. So I don't know how widespread, and who knows what's causing that. But we also know that, and I've been hearing about this, I just haven't talked about it, but here I go talking about it. LifeZ is reporting it this morning that a person who sits on the board of George Soros Open Society owns voting machines in 16 states, including important battleground states like Florida and Arizona. It's called Smartmatic, and the person is Chairman Mark Malik Brown. He's a former UN official, and he sits on the board again of Soros Open Society Foundations. So that's a tremendous concern. Now, I've heard people poo-poo this. That's why I haven't mentioned it. People that I trust say, oh, nothing to see here. Well, I don't understand why, if there's nothing to see, why would they even bother doing this? Why go into this business if there's not some kind of a nefarious purpose? I don't trust it. That's my own speculation. There's more to say about that, but I want to tell you a few other things. Also, George Soros, we know now, according to Media Research Center, has given $61 million to media groups promoting Mrs. Clinton's agenda. $25 million he pledged, George Soros, to give at least $25 million to Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton and other candidates that are Democrats, according to Politico. And in emails exposed by WikiLeaks, it showed that Clinton staffers go out of their way to make Soros happy. Those were their exact words. We must make Soros happy. And that's before the 2016 campaign even started. By the way, he's in charge of fundraising for Mrs. Clinton. So there's a breakdown. Between 20 and 2014, George Soros pumped an astonishing $103,236,630 into media groups that circulate, of course, the liberal agenda. And some of those you will recognize. This is not a complete list, I know, because his hand is in almost all of them, honestly. Sundance, National Public Radio, Columbia University Journalism School, Media Matters, and on and on and on the list goes. And now we know that one of the board members for the Open Society, George Soros Foundation, owns the voting Smartmatic, which is being used in 16 states, including swing states. So I think it's something to be concerned about. And boy, when media types get so huffy and puffy about how ridiculous, and also Mrs. Clinton, about how unpatriotic it is to, you know, sort of hint that there might be a problem with voting. You know, it's like, are you kidding me? We're not falling for that, are we, ladies and gentlemen? We're not falling. We're not going to be maneuvered and manipulated in our thinking. We're not stupid. And I think the American people are a lot smarter than the political elites here in Washington. I do. And so just keep persevering. Let's see, by the way, here's an interesting story out of Fox this morning, because they have been reporting and, you know, hitting it over and over again that Mrs. Clinton is ahead, she's ahead, she's ahead. And I've been bothered by that, because I know in other polls, like in Investor's Business Daily, in the LA Times poll, in a Rasmussen poll, Trump is actually, they're either even or he's ahead. So not all polls are showing that Mrs. Clinton is, like, you know, winning this race hands down. And that is a misreporting. And that's what I think Fox, you know, came out with their own report. So anyway, interesting to me then that Fox reported this morning, Hillary Clinton's campaign is touting some eye-popping advantages in early voting in an apparent effort to energize Democratic voters. But preliminary figures suggest the race remains tighter than her aides acknowledged. And I don't really have time to break this down, but there's just some interesting points in here I noticed. In a recent CNN ORC poll, it found that 33% of registered Latino voters in Nevada support Trump, compared to 54% for Clinton. Now think about that. The point is that Latino Americans want immigration to be tightened up. They're not appalled by this. They see they're smart too. So they're not being fooled. I just think this is interesting. 33% of registered Latino voters in Nevada support Trump, compared to 54% for Clinton. I thought it was like 99% of Latinos who were convinced that Trump hates them. Not so. They're patriotic, loyal Americans, many of them, and they recognize the danger to flooding the borders. And they know, you know, some of them came in the right way, and they're not in favor of just breaking all of the rules and letting the nation have to deal with the flood of immigrants at the southern border. By the way, Mrs. Clinton is ahead in the battleground states of New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, according to this article. Trump leads in the battleground states of Georgia, Iowa, Missouri, and Ohio. And Ohio, by the way, 10% requests for early voting are down 10% among black voters, which is very interesting. You know, I do think this is, you know, the black vote is a huge reason why Barack Obama prevailed in 2008. And so there is a sort of a muted, I think black voters are going to have trouble, some of them voting for Trump, but they know something's wrong. They know something's immoral about Mrs. Clinton's positions on life and on birth and on marriage. They know that something's wrong, and many of them are deeply Christian. And so I'm not surprised by that, and that will have, I'm sure, an effect on the election. This is an interesting story to me, really interesting. This is by Politico. President Barack Obama is campaigning to ensure that no one flees America because of a Donald Trump presidency, according to the White House. During a gaggle with reporters Monday aboard Air Force One, White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said Obama would spend a significant amount of time campaigning for Hillary Clinton and other Democrats down the ballot next week. He's working very hard to make sure that nobody has to leave the country as a result of an electoral outcome that the president doesn't support. And think about that. They're already thinking about perhaps leaving the country if Donald Trump should win. And it isn't because they don't like his presidency. They are worried, I'm filling in the blanks here, about criminal acts that they have done. And they know that Donald Trump will appoint someone in the Attorney General's office. The Justice Department will be totally remade, and many of the agencies, so that crimes will actually be prosecuted and people will be brought to justice. And I think that's why they're talking about that. So just to help you understand what's at stake. I skipped so many things this morning. Let's move down to Trump was on the stump yesterday. He had thousands of people in Naples, Florida. And this is what he said in part. Cut 7.
That's why I proposed a contract with the American voter. It's a set of promises for what I'll do in my first 100 days. It includes getting rid of immediately Obamacare, which is a disaster. Even Bill Clinton admitted Obamacare is the craziest thing in the world. Quote, craziest thing in the world.
All right, we're going to interrupt him.
We're
going to interrupt him because I want you to know the facts here. Premiums will go up sharply next year. Haven't they already gone up sharply? They're doubling. An average, they're going up right now, an average of 25% across the 39 states, and they're getting down to one exchange. It's more expensive. People are having more trouble seeing doctors. They're having to wait for tests. This is really a disaster. It really and truly is. If nothing else, we need to get rid of Obamacare. Mrs. Clinton was the mastermind of single-payer health care. She does not want to get rid of it. She wants to go to single-payer, meaning that the federal government will run our health care. Everything will run through them. They will decide what doctor you see, what test you can take. They will control you in every way. That's the end game here. And so that's the latest on Obamacare. I want to also throw this in before I run out of time. The Clinton Foundation, unbelievable. Daily Caller has done a list of the worst or most questionable foreign donations. And let me just read a couple of them to you. Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia donated between $10 to $25 million when Mrs. Clinton first took office as Secretary of State. They gave an additional $1 to $5 million from Friends of Saudi Arabia. Mrs. Clinton paid, the King of Morocco paid $12 million to the Clinton Foundation in return for having an event there. Russia, I've told you about this, they gave money to make it possible for a uranium mining company to be bought by the Russians. And the Russians now own one-fifth of the entire uranium supply to the United States. And in the process of that, Bill Clinton made a speech for the Russians. He was paid $500,000 to deliver a speech in Moscow. We're going to put that on our Facebook page because there's a lot more detail that I didn't get to. It's the Daily Caller. It's written by Sagar Injeti. Here's a dirty laundry list of the Clinton Foundation's most questionable foreign donations. Coming up next, a man of the law, Joe DeGeneva, former U.S. prosecutor, will be joining us to talk about the corruption in the FBI, so don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls.
Here's a newsflash.
Sharing your faith brings an end to worry. Everything in your life works for good when you live your life for His purpose, the redemption of mankind. A precious lady overwhelmed me with her love for God while diligently cleaning tables at a fast food restaurant. I was jealous of her joy, even though she'd just come through breast surgery with $20,000 in medical bills she couldn't pay. But she wasn't worried. An unknowing customer visiting from Cambodia told her that God was going to solve her financial problem. Then days later, a regular customer who had no knowledge of her financial need gave her a check for $20,000. You see, when you're faithful to God's purpose, there's no need to worry. Turning every circumstance into an opportunity to lead people to Jesus Christ is God's purpose for your life. And revival outside the walls makes it fun when you rely on our ROTW mobile app throughout your day.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. A shocker from the pages of the Wall Street Journal. Facebook employees wanted to censor some of Donald Trump's Facebook postings. They were specifically concerned about his position on banning Muslims from entering the United States. The unnamed Facebook staffer said such comments violated policies on hate speech. So preventing Islamic radicals from entering the nation is now considered hate speech? Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg eventually decided against pulling the comments, which is good, but the episode underscores the concern that Facebook is targeting conservative commentary. I've had a number of postings deleted by Facebook because they did not agree with my content. It's become so problematic that we had to launch a free newsletter to ensure you receive all my commentary. You can subscribe to that newsletter at toddstarnes.com. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Finally, with respect to our recommendation to the Department of Justice, in our system, the prosecutors make the decisions about whether charges are appropriate based on evidence that the FBI helps collect. Although we don't normally make public our recommendations to the prosecutors, we frequently make recommendations and engage in productive conversations with prosecutors about what resolution may be appropriate, given the evidence. In this case, given the importance of the matter, I think unusual transparency is in order. Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. Prosecutors necessarily weigh a number of factors before deciding whether to bring charges. There are obvious considerations like the strength of the evidence, especially regarding intent. Responsible decisions also consider the context of a person's actions and how similar situations have been handled in the past. In looking back at our investigations into the mishandling or removal of classified information, we cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts. All the cases prosecuted involved some combination of clearly intentional and willful mishandling of classified information, or vast quantities of information exposed in such a way as to support an inference of intentional misconduct, or indications of disloyalty to the United States or efforts to obstruct justice. We do not see those things here. To be clear, this is not to suggest that in similar circumstances, a person who engaged in this activity would face no consequences. To the contrary, those individuals are often subject to security or administrative sanctions, but that's not what we're deciding now. As a result, although the Department of Justice makes final decisions on matters like this, we are expressing to Justice our view that no charges are appropriate in this case.
That was July the 5th of this year, you know, so recently. The news keeps coming like a flood. It seems longer than that. But who will forget that night when James Comey made that statement? And, you know, James Comey has such a manner about him that seems so convincing. And I think he has had won the trust of so many Americans, and I think the FBI agents as well. This was a stunning revelation. And now as things are unfolding, and maybe you could say unraveling, we're beginning to see that in that moment, as our next guest says, the FBI director was lying. He was not telling the truth. And that in itself, ladies and gentlemen, is shocking to the core. My next guest is Joe DeGeneva. You've probably seen Joe all over television. I remember Joe. The first time I got acquainted with him was when he was all the time on television making the case during the Clinton scandals. He and his wife, Victoria Tensing, just fearless, constantly. We know now that Joe, of course, was a former prosecutor in the Washington, D.C. He comes from New York City. He was raised in upstate New York. He's been an independent counsel. He prosecuted the Teamsters. He prosecuted Governor Elliot Spitzer in the Troopergate matter. He prosecuted Israeli spy Jonathan Pollard. His resume is rich and long. But the thing I like about Joe is he just speaks the truth. Joe, thanks for joining me this morning.
My pleasure, Sandy.
Joe, I'm just curious about something because you and Victoria share this real passion for truth. I mean, really, you both are just fearless. And you know as well as I do that hardly anyone survives the D.C. culture and stays passionate about truth. I'm curious to know what it is in your past, honestly, that has been your mooring and your source of your keen sense of right and wrong.
Well, I'm not sure that there's an easy answer to that, except, the way your family raises you, the way you're educated, the way you view life. I consider myself a very lucky person to have had the opportunity to be taught by the Oblates of St. Francis de Sales, to have gone to some great schools, University of Cincinnati and Georgetown Law School, when Georgetown used to be an ennobling institution. It's become a lot less than that since I graduated in 1970, 46 years ago. It doesn't seem possible.
No.
I think the bottom line is, you either live your life the way you want to or you don't. But this is not about courage. This is about the obvious. And in the case of Gene, by the way, I was born in Wilmington, Delaware. I love upstate New York. That's where my daughter lives. But I was born in Wilmington, Delaware, the hotbed of Eastern radicalism. Let me just say this about never not losing your base and always having a compass to keep you on the trail. James Comey lost his compass. He's now viewed by many people inside and outside the FBI, and I have spoken with agents inside the Bureau now and outside the Bureau. They consider him a dirty cop. They consider him someone who is unfit to serve. They believe that he has no moral authority to lead the FBI, particularly after the revelations about Associate Director McCabe and McCabe's wife run for state senate in Virginia. They believe that Comey has created a double standard of justice in the United States. They believe that his explanations are sophomoric. They believe that he has embarrassed the Bureau. They believe that he thinks that everybody else is stupid and that he's smart as a whip. The truth is, James Comey lost his compass years ago when he decided he was going to try and take down Scooter Libby with the assistance of Patrick Fitzgerald. Comey has a long history of being vindictive. He has a long history of criticizing people in private about being not as honorable as he is and having the intent necessary. There was a very easy way to resolve this case that didn't involve doing all the bad, stupid, and politically corrupt things that James Comey did. What they should have done, and it would have been very, very simple, with everybody involved in this case, from Hillary Clinton on down to all the people, everybody gets a misdemeanor plea. They all get to plead guilty to a misdemeanor. They get to keep their civil rights. She can keep running for office. If people want to ignore it, they can say that's part of the cost of doing business, but there would have been accountability. Instead, what Comey did was he held no one accountable, and he thought that by publicly accusing her in his smarmy way at his July 5th so-called news conference, that everyone was going to understand and forgive him. He was presumptuous. Here's a guy with a guaranteed 10-year tenure who decided to become political. He made it very clear that he was not going to recommend the prosecution of the first female nominee for president of a major political party. Pure and simple, that's what it was. It's uncomplicated. The guy has a complex about himself. He thinks he is Mount Rushmore. But when all is said and done, he has dirtied the Bureau, he's dirtied himself up, and the head of the FBI is a dirty cop.
You know, Joe, well, that's a pretty strong accusation. I remember very well that prior to his announcement, you were talking to the press a lot, and you were talking to FBI agents who were working on the case. No names mentioned, but you had connections. And you said, they're going to prosecute. They're going to bring charges. And, of course, when Comey made his statement, he said it's a unanimous decision. You know,
It was not unanimous.
So recount to us the lies that he told in that statement.
Well, first of all, it wasn't a unanimous decision. In fact, according to agents with whom I have spoken, a very large majority wanted a prosecution brought in the case. Comey did not. And so the vote was one to whatever the other number was. And the only one that mattered was Comey. It was unanimous that she be stripped of her security clearances, except for Comey. He said there was no intent, and that in the history of these cases, intentional and willful conduct was needed. The setting up of the server, the private server, by Hillary Clinton, personally, by her, in the basement of her home, an unsecured, unencrypted server, which was to be used with unencrypted, unsecure various devices by her and her staff, was evidence of intent. It was intent to force the compromise of national security information. It was intent to avoid congressional subpoenas. It was intent to avoid court subpoenas. It was intent to avoid Freedom of Information Act requests. When he says that the classic cases of mishandling or removal evidence would not sustain the prosecution in this case, first of all, he's absolutely wrong on the law. Second of all, it was not his job to make the legal decision about whether or not a prosecution was sustainable. That was for Loretta Lynch, this phony baloney who pretends to be the Attorney General of the United States. She's more like a school teacher. If you watch her speeches, it's like she's talking to fourth graders around the country. It's so embarrassing to watch Loretta Lynch pretend to be Attorney General. No wonder Comey took over. It was easy.
Yeah.
But his protestations that this was not a case that would no reasonable prosecutor would bring is literally ludicrous on its face. Consider the obstruction of justice, the destruction of evidence, knowing that various emails were under subpoena by Congress and by courts. The notion that that doesn't show criminal intent is ridiculous. All throughout the years of prosecution and to this very day, U.S. attorneys around the country use the destruction of evidence as proof of what is called guilty conscience. You destroy something because you don't want the government to see it. Why don't you want the government to see it? Because it's going to prove you committed a crime. Everything that was done on behalf of Hillary Clinton was done because it was to stop a prosecution. This was a fake investigation. It was a pretend village investigation. It wasn't a real investigation. Comey pretends that it was. It wasn't. He made up his mind from the very beginning that there were going to be no charges. No matter what the evidence was, he was never going to recommend a prosecution. And that's why everything that he has done has brought disrepute and disrespect down on the Bureau. And when all was said and done, the FBI agents that I've spoken to said, you know who ran this investigation? It wasn't Jim Comey. It was Kendall, Hillary's lawyer.
Oh, gosh,
David
who was so
Kendall.
Involved.
David
who was
Kendall
so
ran
yeah,
the investigation,
David.
Laid down all of the rules for the investigation, and James Comey followed everyone. His attorney general in this case was David Kendall, not Loretta Lynch.
You know, and of course, that name conjures up a lot of memories for you and for me because of the Clinton scandals during all those years. David Kendall was central to... I don't even remember he just was always covering for them. He was the kind of the orchestrator of getting them out of trouble.
You know what? Yeah. I give him credit. If you can get away with it, if you can do this and have the government fold to you, that shows you something about the nature of the people in government. The fact that Comey allowed himself to be manipulated by David Kendall is disgraceful. Now, Comey will say, oh, tut, tut, listen, I did everything by the book. Yeah, the wrong book. He used the old manual, the one that happened in Watergate when L. Patrick Gray burned Watergate evidence in the fireplace of his home in New England. This is so out of order, it's unbelievable.
It really is, and did you really expect anything different from him? Did you think he was going to bring a case against you?
I thought Comey was as much as I disliked him because of what he did to Scooter Libby with the complicity of George W. Bush, who should have pardoned Scooter Libby but never did, and I will never forgive George W. Bush for that. He never gets a dime from me for his library. When you go back and see, as much as I disliked Comey for what he did to Scooter Libby, I thought that as the head of the FBI, he would exercise good judgment. He had a good reputation as being a prosecutor, but what happened was it was all about him, and he folded completely. This was about history. This was about his legacy as FBI director. He did not want to be remembered as being the person who recommended the prosecution of the first female nominee for the presidency of a major party.
You know, I had forgotten all about Comey. In fact, I'm not sure I knew about Comey's involvement with Scooter Libby. We need to talk. Let's talk about that just briefly. I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but I'm from Chicago.
Well, it's real simple.
Yeah, well.
You have to remember this about James Comey. James Comey was in the Southern District of New York, which is, you know, a very, very important prosecutor's office. I ran the one in the District of Columbia. The next big one is the one in New York. Comey was there with a guy named Patrick Fitzgerald, who, as you remember, prosecuted Scooter Libby.
I remember.
Patrick Fitzgerald and James Comey did a case called the Mark Rich case. Mark Rich was a very famous commodities broker who was indicted by the Southern District of New York by James Comey and Patrick Fitzgerald. He fled the country before he was indicted. He wasn't really a fugitive. He was in Switzerland. And he never came back, and he remained a fugitive for 30 years until Bill Clinton pardoned him. And do you know who led the fight to get Mark Rich his pardon to the offense of James Comey and Patrick Fitzgerald? Scooter Libby, when he was in private practice. And he hired Jack Quinn, who had been White House counsel to Bill Clinton, to get the pardon from Bill Clinton. And they got Mark Rich a pardon. And James Comey and Patrick Fitzgerald decided they were going to figure out a way to get Scooter Libby. And when Comey was Deputy Attorney General under George Bush and the Valerie Plame leak occurred, Comey and Fitzgerald both knew that Scooter Libby was not responsible for the leak of Valerie Plame's name. They knew that it was Richard Armitage, the Undersecretary of State, and so did Colin Powell. But neither Colin Powell nor Richard Armitage told President Bush that Armitage, was the leaker. They allowed the false narrative that Scooter Libby was the leaker to become public, and they went after Scooter Libby. And here's what Patrick Fitzgerald said to Scooter Libby's lawyers in the first meeting they ever had. We will drop any case against you if you give us Dick Cheney. That's James Comey and Patrick Fitzgerald. They wanted to get somebody. They didn't want justice. And so they ended up trying to get Scooter Libby to turn him against the vice president. For what? No one can tell. Because these guys were crazed. And this proved to me conclusively what he did with Hillary Clinton, that Comey is an untrustworthy person who is not fit to lead the FBI.
Well, you know, Joe, because we're from Chicago, my husband was at the FBI in Chicago. Patrick Fitzgerald was a, you know, larger-than-life figure, kind of very much like Comey in terms of highly respected. And then when he did what he did to Scooter Libby, because I followed that case so closely, the injustice of that was unbelievable. So the comparison here between the two, what you're saying makes a great deal of sense to me. All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about this latest revelation that just came out in the last 24 hours about the donation to the FBI agent's wife. Unbelievable. More dirty stuff. It's just appalling to most of us. My guest is Joe DeGenova. We'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Ryan Dobson here. You know, throughout the years, I've had a lot of people tell me they wish they had a dad like mine. Well, the truth is, you can be mentored by my dad, Dr. James Dobson, by listening to Family Talk, right here on this radio station. Whether you have questions about how to spice up your marriage or how to discipline that strong-willed child, we address the topics that matter most to your family. So make plans today to catch Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Each weekday morning at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on AFR Talk.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Last week on October 16, Planned Parenthood was allowed to celebrate its 100th birthday. On that day in 1916, Margaret Sanger opened the world's first birth control clinic in New York City, which would later become the leading provider of abortions in the United States, responsible for the deaths of around 6.8 million people. The foundation of the organization was based in Sanger's passion for eugenics, specifically for limiting the reproduction of, quoting, morons, mental defectives, epileptics, illiterates, paupers, unemployables, criminals, prostitutes, and dope fiends, unquote, even arguing that they should be forced to be sterilized. Racism was also implicit in Sanger's list of those unfit to breed. This is the legacy that Planned Parenthood celebrated this past week, and it's a legacy that continues to this day, only couched in the language of compassion and choice, while it is simply an agent of death. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. James O'Keefe's investigative organization Project Veritas is justifiably famous for its undercover videos that expose and inflame the outrageous, covert misdeeds of the hard left and its allies. The latest in a series of reports about ties between Hillary Clinton's campaign and unsavory political operatives at the Democratic National Committee and ostensibly independent organizations reveals what would appear to be a new legal problem for candidate Clinton. She is credited repeatedly with personally ordering groups that are not allowed to coordinate with her to dog, or I should say, duck, Donald Trump across the country. O'Keefe's videos reinforce a conclusion already justified by Hillary Clinton's other serial run-ins with the law, including violations of her own requirements for safeguarding classified information while Secretary of State. Statutes are meant to govern others' behavior, not hers. See if that's okay with you at ProjectVeritas.com. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. My guest is Joe DeGeneva, former special prosecutor, former U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, and many, many other things, and really deeply involved in the response of the FBI agents to James Comey's announcement that there would be no prosecution brought to Mrs. Clinton over the email scandal. Let me read from probably our mutual friend, Andy McCarthy. He says, every time you think you must have heard the last of the irregularities in the Clinton email investigation, another shoe drops. So now we learn that the political backers of a longtime Clinton crony and fixer, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, made $675,000 in cash and in-kind contributions to the election campaign of the wife of the FBI official who later ran the investigation of Mrs. Clinton. The Wall Street Journal is reporting this, by the way. The contributions came from to Dr. Jill McCabe, who was the wife of Associate Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe. McAuliffe recruited Dr. McCabe to run, and then they turned around and gave her $675,000 in cash and in-kind contributions. She lost the race, but after that, McCabe was then promoted to the person in charge of overseeing the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email. Terry McAuliffe, by the way, is tied at the hip with the Clintons, has been for decades. He's been their chief fundraiser. Joe, what do you make of all of this?
Well, it is once again an example of how the FBI has lost its way. Interestingly enough, when confronted with information about this by the Wall Street Journal the other day, the FBI's written response says that he was recused, McCabe, from all matters involving the state of Virginia, as if that was the conflict of interest. The conflict of interest was the FBI and the investigation of Hillary Clinton, who was as close to Terry McAuliffe as anybody can get. Lest people forget, when Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton left the White House, they bought their house in Chappaqua. They got a mortgage, a personal loan from Terry McAuliffe of a couple of $1 million to buy that house. This guy was as close, he was one of their arms, and the notion that McCabe would be on the case of Hillary Clinton with her relationship with the Democratic Party, which she now leads, with Terry McAuliffe and his wife running for state senate is unbelievable. And they simply ignored that connection when they made their public statement. I remain amazed at the ability of Comey to say things with a straight face. And I'll tell you what else I'm amazed by. The inability of Republicans on Capitol Hill to conduct proper oversight. I got a call the other day from people on Capitol Hill on various committees. I'm not going to name the committees. I'm going to spare them to assist them with their investigations into this because our law firm had offered to help represent FBI agents who wanted to come forward. We offered to represent any current or former agent for free who wanted to give their testimony to Congress about this investigation. I suggested to two committees on Capitol Hill, one in the House, one in the Senate, that as soon as they return, they introduce a resolution of no confidence in the director of the FBI. I said, you know, the evidence is quite clear that he has abused the powers of office, that he has acted politically, and I think what you should do is start a public discussion. You don't have to pass the resolution. It needs to be introduced by two committees, one in each House, a resolution of no confidence in the FBI director. And do you know what I was told? There simply isn't enough evidence to do that.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all, Joe. You know, I have to say, you probably know this, but if in case you don't, there are a ton of people who were working on the Benghazi situation who were experts. Some of them were victims that whose names were never known. Others were parents, friends, wives. Andy McCarthy was part of this coalition. They had done all of this research, all of this writing, and would you know that the committee that was investigating Benghazi would have nothing to do with this group who knew everything about Benghazi? Nothing to do with it whatsoever. The Republican
left. I'm very familiar with that unfortunate development. I think that the Benghazi committee was handled very poorly. They didn't know how to message, not unlike Boehner and McConnell. They didn't know how to message. They didn't know how to get their story out. The Democrats controlled the messaging out of that committee. Trey Gowdy, I'm sure, is a very fine person and a very smart guy. But when it came to getting this story out and conducting an investigation, this was not a criminal prosecution. This was a congressional investigation. The object is to educate people, not to prosecute people. You don't conduct things like this like a prosecution. You conduct it as a public education project, or, as John Dingell used to say, a public grand jury. The Democrats had no problem when they were in charge of these committees wielding power viciously through the use of subpoenas. That's the other thing. These guys never even issued subpoenas for this stuff. They still haven't issued subpoenas for the names of the FBI agents who ran the investigation. They still haven't issued subpoenas for the basic information. I don't know what it is about the inability to issue subpoenas. It's mind-boggling.
The whole thing is mind-boggling, and that's why we're in the crisis we're in, Joe. Nobody is doing the job.
That's exactly why Trump exists, because of Boehner and McConnell. They didn't lead. They didn't message. They didn't know how to get out front of things. They didn't fight the president. They let the president roll all over him. They were afraid they were going to be called racist. Well, guess what? They sat down and they got called racist anyway.
Yeah, and well, and Paul Ryan is doing the same thing. And I, in fact, I was one of the questions I'm skipping ahead here, but from your perspective, how does this election, the effect of the outcome of this election, how does it bear upon all of the corruption? At least we're describing just a tiny portion of it. What's at stake here, Joe?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear the most important thing that's at stake is who will be named to the Supreme Court. And if she wins, I can assure you, she will name at least two people, probably three. The complexion, tenor, tone, professionalism of the Supreme Court will be turned around. The country will be very, very different as a result of it. You will get justices who are very, very far to the left. Secondly, you saw how this administration weaponized the Internal Revenue Service against conservatives. They are going to weaponize the IRS double. The FBI now, it is very clear that the FBI will be a political tool of the Clinton administration. As long as James Comey is the director, the FBI will be a dangerous, weaponized tool against conservatives. It saddens me to say I have great faith in the FBI agents themselves. I have no faith in Comey. He has embarrassed himself in the Bureau, and he has made it very clear that he will play ball with a political elite, but it serves his purposes, his legacy purposes. And I think that when all is said and done, the biggest legacy will be two things of this election if Trump does not win. And that is the Supreme Court will be changed forever, and for generations the country will be different, and the government will be weaponized against conservatives. It will start with the use of the IRS, and then it will go to the FCC and trying to shut down conservative radio. You can see it in the president's statements as he gets near the end of his term. He wants some sort of an ombudsman to review the conduct of people who exercise their First Amendment freedoms in the media. I didn't know there was a licensing requirement in the First Amendment. Did you? Did you know there was a licensing requirement in the First Amendment?
I didn't.
This is the nonsense. This is Hillary Clinton who says she wants to she's going to reverse Citizens United. Well, how is she going to do that? Citizens United is a decision based on the First Amendment, right of free speech. Is she going to amend the First Amendment like Chuck Schumer wants to do? Do you know that the Democrats actually have a constitutional amendment introduced by Chuck Schumer and approved by Harry Reid that would amend the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, this perfect piece of writing from the 18th century, and just to overturn Citizens United?
Yes,
in the court apparently just isn't enough for them.
They never are satisfied. That's what I talk about. You know, in any area, it never is static. It just keeps moving leftward. Hey, you know, Joe, we must talk about, at least briefly, what's happening. These agents are likely, we think, maybe, to get subpoenas and have to testify before Congress. And this is putting them in a terrible position. Oh, so, and I think you describe in some of your other interviews that there's a tremendous depression at the FBI right now by the rank and file, who I just don't think people understand the importance of honesty with the Bureau. I mean, you can be fired for lying about anything. Lying is absolutely anathema. And so the morale there you were describing is pretty, pretty depressed and dismal. So how do you think this is going to play out? Are the agents going to leave, or what are they going to do?
Well, these agents are not going to resign because it's their careers. They are not going to do very, very much unless they're subpoenaed to come forward. And then even if they're subpoenaed, I don't know whether or not they'll tell the truth or not. Some people say they will. Some people say they won't. To me, the issue is we know what happened in this case. I think it's great to try and get the subpoena of the agents, but I don't need it. When you look at the evidence in this case and what the director has said publicly about it, which I assume he believes. He has given a lengthy public statement. He has filed a report with Congress explaining his investigation. Now, here's the interesting thing about his report to Congress. He bemoans the fact that he could not get certain documents. Well, you know how you get certain documents? You impanel a grand jury and you issue subpoenas. And then if people don't want to produce those things, they go to a judge and they try to quash the subpoena. And you have a big fight in front of a judge and the judge resolves it. He didn't do that. Apparently, from all we know, I mean, they have never said there was a grand jury. They have never said there were search warrants. They have never said there were subpoenas. Maybe they were, but I assume he would have talked about it if there were. Maybe there were, and he just doesn't want to talk about it, but I've never heard that there were. The bottom line is, whatever the agents are going to do, they're going to do. I'm way beyond that, because one of the things that people are not supposed to do in a democracy, is suspend their judgment. You're allowed to look at a set of facts as a voter and say, I don't believe what I'm being told. And the reason I don't believe it is ABC. I don't believe what I'm being told by James Comey. And the reasons I don't believe it, I've just given you over the last half hour. No reasonable prosecutor would have done anything except put this in front of a grand jury. And for him to suggest that wasn't necessary is ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
Joe, we only have 3 minutes left, so it's kind of unfair, but one thing that has been mentioned, and I don't think discussed very much, not enough anyway, is the complicity and involvement of the President of the United States in this cover-up, that he was using a pseudonym, using the same email server, emailing Mrs. Clinton, and that's likely some of the 33,000 she eliminated. What can you say about that?
Well, obviously the President knew she had a private server and was using a private email account. He lied about that publicly, which is not unusual. The President has lied about a lot of things. You can keep your doctor, you can keep your insurance if you like your insurance. I mean, where do you start? I mean, it's endless. A guy who's the commander-in-chief couldn't pronounce the word corpsman and called it corpsman in one of his first major speeches, but the press couldn't report that because they didn't want to embarrass him. Bottom line is, the president is a street hustler from Chicago. He's done a brilliant job of hustling. He's going to be a thorn in the side of whoever the president is, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. He's not going away. He's going to be a young street mobster after he leaves the White House, a very rich one. But he's going to be around for a long time to come. He was clearly complicit. He knew. That's why he said publicly, while the investigation was underway as a form of command influence, that he said the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, nothing that she did harmed national security. Well, that, of course, was a sign to the agents, don't go there. Don't you dare even think about charging her. And that was a classic example of command influence by the President of the United States, who is, after all, the chief law enforcement officer of the United States under the Constitution. I'm not surprised by anything he does or says. He's been able to get away with it because of a complicit and loving press, and he's going to continue to do it when he's out of office. He's going to be amazing to watch. He's going to be one of the most disruptive former presidents we have ever had, and no one will say they're going to let him get away with it, but a lot of people are not. Believe many of us will speak up about him and about what he does.
Joe, 1 minute left. What could a President Trump to really turn the corruption around? Can one man do that?
Well, the first thing he should do after he gets in is he should name a very fine attorney general. I would propose Rudy Giuliani for attorney general. Get someone who can take over American law enforcement, deal with the federal government, deal with all of the things that are going on at the EPA, the corruption that's over there, the private email accounts at the EPA, the lawlessness through executive orders, repeal a whole bunch of executive orders. As soon as he gets in, there are hundreds and hundreds of executive orders. But naming a great attorney general and a great CIA director and a great director of national intelligence, those three appointments will be the most important of all.
Oh, Joe, thanks. It's great to spend time with you. And thank you for all your service all these years. You and Victoria Tensing, your wife. You practice law
thank
together
you very
here
much.
In D.C.
My pleasure.
Yep.
Take care.
Great to talk to you. All right. Well, all right. A bucket load of things to think about. By the way, Dolly Kyle Browning will be my guest on Friday. She is the childhood friend of Bill Clinton. She has a lot to say about Mrs. Clinton. She's just written a book about that. So she'll be my guest on Friday. She was a recommendation of the interview I did with Dave Shippers, who many of you, thousands of you actually, weighed in on. So you will look forward to that, I think. This is Sandy Rios. Enjoy your day in spite of the news, because God really continues to reign. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.